The Pacific Group is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful to you to contact an anonymous organization that more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Good evening. My name is Rick Santos, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics in this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by a main speaker. Speakers, please note you'll be giving a 5-minute and a 1-minute reminder when it's time to wrap up your talk. Our first 10-minute speaker is Daniel S.
Thank you. Dan Alcoholic, Mr. Bright Day, February 22, 2020. I have a sponsor, name is Larry Bailey. We have a sponsor, Jerry Jones. And the Pacific Group is our home group. Marty, thank you for having me here today. When I called you, I scream at you. Thank you though. Golly, where do I start? Well, 10 minutes? Okay. Well, it used to be like, this past Sunday, I had took my first cake for 1 year. And looking back at that now, thinking like how far I got from here. Because a year ago, I was that one scary kid coming into the Pacific Group on Wednesday night, thinking like, how am I going to be like these people? Because I was trying to differentiate myself. I'm from a small town outside Bakersfield. I was born and raised there for 20 years. And what happened there was a lot of things. You know, I've been a country boy. So we used to go on the farm, have fun, you know, all this thing, whatnot. And one day I decided to move to LA because I wanted to be somebody. And to be somebody, move into big city and make contact with these high profile actors and actresses and getting, I'm going to be the big shot. Well, for the last 10 years, that didn't work. Instead, I made myself a more big hope because that didn't work. And I've been using drinking for a long time because I didn't like myself most of all. You know, I didn't like my hometown. I didn't like how I grew up as the oldest kid in the family that I got to take care of my two little brothers. And I didn't like responsibility. I want to take care of myself. I'm pretty much take everything in my own control. I grew up Catholic, but that didn't help me. That it's not a reason why I became an alcoholic. But I've been thinking that, you know, I've been arguing with this Catholic teacher. I've been doing all this and that. No, thank you. You know, I'm God. I could do all things on my own. I'll be fine. But that didn't turn out to be fine. And when it turned out so miserable to the point that I need to get out of that, I didn't like how I feel. I did not like that. I didn't know how to feel with my family. You know, we were shutting that down. You know, be a man, Daniel. You know, don't cry over this. Go do all this, man. You know, we all know how to you do it. And that made me so mad all the time. So mad. I get so mad for the little thing to the biggest thing. I argue with people randomly on the metro bus, on the subway, wherever, and I just want to stop with that. For a long time, maybe 10 years in LA, I've been jumping around jobs. I've been jumping around school. I keep dropping them out. I burned a lot of big bridges, and I finally got it. I became a professional cook in downtown at a high restaurant for the Hilton Hotel because I was looking for trying to find myself. I wanted to be the kind of guy I came here for the first place in LA. And so I became a professional cook. I was cooking, I was doing a lot of stations, running around, I was doing 12-hour shifts. And it was fun. I loved it. And the best part was the free booze, the free alcohol that the bartender gave to us. And I'll get to drink with my chef, you know, going to the bar after work, hang out with these guys who I see them as God, Titans, actually. This dude's a sword, man. Pegasus. And, well, one day they caught up to me. They call me drinking in a job. I'm not allowed to, even though it's part of the culture, but not this kind of job. So they let me go. After 2 years working my way up, going to move to Las Vegas, the Caesar Palace for the new restaurant, I thought, this is it. This is it, man. You're nobody. you lost a lot of people, you lost your respect, pretty much you're nobody. And I carried that for a long time. And for the next 4 years, I was that nobody. I did not like that, who I became. And so I started drinking more. I started using more. I started going to dark places that I never thought that would be. You know, I'm from a little small, humble town. My family were very nice, but not these people I hang out with. And well, I started hanging out at by McCarthy Park. I hang out by Skid Row. I started hanging out in the dark alleys. Who knows where I ended up. And when it got so bad to the point that I need to black out, I need to drink because I need to forget it. Again, I don't like my feelings. I didn't like that. Well, one day, a year ago, after a long time of white knuckling that I thought I had the control. Again, I'm God. I got this. Well, that didn't work. What happened was that I got mugged. I got sexual assaulted. My phone was stolen. My wallet was stolen. Everything you could think of. And I ended up with a black guy. I didn't know what to do anymore. I got down on my knee that night. And I tried to pray like I used to pray when I was a kid. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. All I could think of was go to my neighbors across the street and go to her condo and jump off the building. I just want to kill myself because I'm tired of this. I'm sick of this, man. The things I've been told, what my family taught me, it's all a bunch of lies, dude. You know, it's never been the truth. There's no vision for me. When I got down on my knees, I couldn't say anything. I did, however, saw what I needed to see. I saw myself just like the Odyssey going through time and space, and I saw myself at the end looking at me. And I knew what I needed to do. And so the next day, I called my friend across the street. Hey, can I come to your place and talk about something? She's been in the AA for a long time, and she knew my story. She took me for a year, coming in the meeting, trying to have me to stay. I said, young lady, Canada, stay, Islander. Well, I didn't want to stay because I didn't like what you guys have. Again, you know, just like the first day of the Pacific group, I didn't like that. I didn't like any of it. I didn't like to dress up suits. And so I just went over after she told me, come over, we'll go to a meeting. My plan was to go to the condo and jump off. But she knew something was up, or as I like to believe, it was God. Because what happened was she told me, oh, stay down there. Oh, you're young. No, Dan, stay down there. I'll come pick you up. Well, she did. She picked me up, took me to my first meeting on Sunday night by USC up the West Adam. And from there, that's where I met my sponsor, my current sponsor. And from there, it was a quiet journey just to get where I am right now. There's a lot of things, a lot of action what you guys taught me. You know, first of all was get be sober, get a commitment, get a sponsor and home group. Okay, I got that. Boom. Okay, now it's working step. I didn't want to step because as I said on step two, can't you believe that power greater than ourselves could restore the sanity? And I'm thinking, you guys think I'm crazy? There's no way. I'm normal, okay? You're the guys who are crazy. You're the guys who are saying pray this, pray that. Dude, no, don't call me crazy. Well, fake it till you make it, folks. So that's what I did. And for the next 3 months, going to Zoom meeting, I started listening to the stories. Don't try to differentiate myself, but to find the similarities. And I heard the same story. I heard what all the bits and pieces that I piece it together myself and my story, and I relate to you. I finally got it. Why am I crazy? Why did I burn so many bridges? Why I hurt so many people? Why? For the first 3 weeks of my sobriety, I was going to every meeting, every day, three times more than that with my sponsor. You know, we were on a mission. Get to many meetings that you can, Dan. Collect a lot of chips you can, Dan. All right, you know, we were ongoing. Well, 3 weeks later, we got a lockdown here in LA. And I didn't know what to do. I look at my sponsor like, what do we do, Larry? What? Well, again, stay. So I stay. Most of all, I put myself in the middle. I got a commitment. I got a lot of work. I've done so many things, so many actions that I started to see it's coming. It's getting better. It really does. Again, this past Sunday, when I turned 1 year old, I was looking at my chest, and a good friend of mine gave me my first 1 year coin, which is real cool because, hey, I love red. But to get that first year coin, well, for the newcomers especially, thinking, I need to have a 24-hour chip. You know, you start with one day, just for 2 days, and you come back again to get another chip and another chip. It's a rigorous, but honestly, work. It's, you know, right now I'm getting a little bit emotional because that's the great thing about my sobriety. You get in touch with feelings. The bad thing is you get in touch with feelings. I'd like to end with this little story. My first sobriety at the West Adam group, they told me, welcome home, you know. That's, I thought that was weird because I got kicked out from my places and jobs. My family won't take me back. Like, you know, go home, Dan. Where is home? Where is, you know, I don't know. And on my fourth day, I came to Pacific group and all of you told me, welcome home, man. I'm like, I guess. Well, in my last, on the yard, my first day at the yard, I was in the line going down to meet this short guy I heard so many about, you know? I'm like, okay, this is what's up. Oh, sorry. Okay, I'll make it quick. There he was, you know, Clancy, standing right there at the end of the line, shaking everyone's head. I'm thinking, oh, man, I don't know this guy, you know, might as well. He's right there in his jacket, in his shades, in his cap. You know, he looked at me, I look at him like, what? When I extended my arm to shake his hand, my sponsor told me, you know, kind of he came rushing to me and grabbed my hand as if I was about to fall down. And I remember that time when I was a kid, Dad was teaching me how to ride my bike down the alley. And every time I knocked him down, Dad would grab me, hold me, and told me, it's okay, you know, keep going, keep going. And Clancy told me was welcome home, kid. And I truly felt was home, you know. That was the first and last time I met Clancy. But I will ever forever cherish that moment, you know. It will get better for the newcomers to keep coming back, you know. For a guy like me, a tough guy, you think that I sold my cheese and such. I got this new thing that's called feelings. But it's one day at a time. One day at a time. No. So thank you. Thank you, Maury. Thank you, everyone. Love you.
Thank you, Daniel. Our second 10-minute speaker is Yuko P.
Hi, my name is Yuko. I'm an alcoholic. Marty, thank you so much. And Daniel, thank you for your talk. And congrats on 1 year. That's amazing. That's awesome. And I want to welcome if you're new. And my sobriety day is November 20th, 1996. And it's just a great honor to speak at my home group because this is where all my heroes are. And and this is where my new life started. So I'm so grateful, but I really, really want to welcome you if you're new, and you must be you're just so brave that you're just sober. You're just doing this deal during the pandemic. I'll tell you my little boring alcoholic story, but I was born and raised in Japan, and I just really needed to get out of Japan because Japan was my problem. And I'm the fourth of five children and two brothers and two sisters. And I just was just a weird kid. You know, a lot of us think or thought we were a weird kid, but I really was a weird kid. I really was a weird kid growing up and just painfully shy and just didn't fit in. And sorry, I just have to change to the gallery view. And then I took my first drink when I was 18, and I fell in love. I just took Suntory whiskey, and I loved it. I just fell in love with alcohol right away. I just knew that I was going to keep drinking for the rest of my life until the day I died. That's how I just was so conscious about it. And then my life completely changed for the better. I went on to college. I became a drummer in a rock band, and I have arrived. My life was so good. Alcohol worked so beautifully. And then what happened to me was I had many, many hims in my life, but I met him and I married this guy I didn't really know well to come to the States. So we got married and came to the States. And then this guy I hardly knew just told me to stop drinking. And I was like, what? I came all the way to drink, you know, all the way from Japan to America to drink. But so that was just really tragic. But that's how I started my life here in the States. And so that was just a tragic. That marriage was so bad. And but I stayed with him for 4 years because I did not know a soul here. And I realized, oh, my gosh, you know, I just didn't even speak English, you know, because I was so excited to meet you guys and party with you guys. But I realized, oh, shoot, you know, I don't speak English. So anyway, I have to fast forward. I left, eventually left him, and I met some drinking friends, obviously. And then by then my English got much better. And when I was drunk, I could speak English, no problem anyway. And then, but I just really, alcohol worked beautifully for many, many years, but I, towards the end, the last 1.5 years was so, so bad, you guys. My life was getting smaller and smaller. I moved in with this drug addict. He took my stuff and I became homeless. And I found myself a little job as a teacher, and I was teaching Japanese kids at the little school, just not making much money. And I dropped out of school. I was in grad school, but I just dropped out because drinking became more important. And but I pushed pushed away everyone, and or some people just got disgusted with me and they left. And so I was the most, you know, just the loneliest creature in this entire world. And I became suicidal. I was really confused. I wasn't sure what was wrong with me. And I was seeing a psychiatrist and therapist, and I tried to find out what was wrong with me. I couldn't figure out. And I just thought that I had to die. You know, I had to die to just prove to the world that they were wrong and I'm right. And that's the only reason why I just wanted to just kill myself, you know. And I just kept drinking and drinking. I could not stop drinking. And I just, my head was so loud. And so I got locked up in a psychiatric emergency room at Harbor UCLA on my 32nd birthday. And at that time, my boss from that little school, I got fired from, thank you. She came to pick me up from the hospital, and she brought her best friend who was in AA, Jenny. And Peggy was my boss. She was, she asked me 100 questions. I could look at you, you know, that with the look. She looked at me and asked me a bunch of questions I couldn't answer. But her best friend, Jenny, I hardly knew. She was in AA, and she 12-stepped me that morning and with her kindness. So I decided to try AA, even though I knew I'm not an alcoholic because I'm Japanese, you know. So my journey started not right away. You know, if you're really new and struggling, just welcome, you know, stay with us no matter what. And because I kept drinking and I just kept coming back, and I couldn't stop drinking. I eventually got a sponsor. She just did not know what to do with me. And so ended up being in a Pacific group. And then my sponsor today, you know, is Lindsay J. She's in Georgia, but she became my sponsor. She was at the time, in my opinion, she was one of the toughest sponsors in the Pacific group. And I was so scared of her. So I started working the steps. I became really active, going to a meeting every day, going to every single watch, every single move with like Dave Wilson and, you know, Class of 96. And, you know, I was just doing everything because I just did not know what to do, you know, how to do life without drinking because I'm an alcoholic. And then reluctantly, I just started working the steps like Danielle, you know. And then I went to the yard, and then I just hated the yard, you guys. I sucked at volleyball, you know, and I just did not want to do anything, you know, have anything to do with those crazy alcoholic women. But there were a bunch of alcoholic women at the yard, and I was stuck with those, you know, crazy alcoholic women for hours, you know. It was torturous. And But, you know, just in spite of me, you guys, you people in my in my home group just didn't give up on me. You know, the more miserable I was, the kinder you were. And then all of a sudden I had 60 days. All of a sudden I got 90 days. And I would go take a chip at the key group and the book study. And the room just went nuts, you know. And I was like, what is so great about being sober? Why are you so excited? You know, but that's exactly what I needed. And you guys just gave me so much attention. Because I was so miserable. And Clancy too, you know, Clancy, when I went to the yard, like, you know, Daniel, I hated the yard. I hated the yard. And I would go there. And then like, I had like a couple weeks sober. And then Clancy was, where's Yoko? You know, my name's Yuko, by the way, you know, and then he used to call me Yoko. And then he would just pull me to the middle of the circle at the lunchtime, and he put his arm around me and he said, 50 something years ago today, Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. You know, and I was just mortified, you guys. I was mortified. And I was like, I wasn't born yet, you know, but he said, well, but your grandfather was there, you know. But the thing is, I'm Japanese and he's American, but it doesn't matter. He accepted me. He loved me. This newcomer puke who was so miserable, he accepted me and just gave me attention. And that's what AA is about. And my gosh, I'm running out of time. I met a wonderful, wonderful him, real him. And he's in this group, you know. And when I was not looking for him, I just found him, and we got married, and a bunch of you guys were at a wedding, and you know, life was good. You know, life was good. I mended all the broken relationship with my family. But I have 30 seconds. So so many great things happened. And so, you know, ups and downs, you know, we've got so many ups and downs. But you know what, I'm an alcoholic before I'm Japanese. I'm an alcoholic before I'm a mom, before I'm a teacher, before anything. And that's why I have to put AA first in my own way. And thank you so much for my life. I owe you my life. I love you guys.
Thank you, Yuko. Our main speaker tonight is Micheline F.
Hi, everybody. My name's Micheline. I'm a grateful alcoholic. Thanks for having me. I'm going to put myself back on gallery view because I don't actually want to look at my neck for the next half hour. I want to thank Marty for inviting me to come tonight and welcome the newcomers. And happy birthday to the birthday people. And I love Yuko and Daniel Scher so much. So thanks again. I really appreciated it, and I got a lot out of it. I had some friends here tonight, or people that said they'd be my friend. And so thanks for the support you've given me via text this week. I almost drank at 6.5 years sober. My sobriety date's June 30th, 1982. Relapse is not mandatory. I've stayed for the whole run so far. I have a sponsor in a home group. My home group Sunday morning, the Sunday morning paper meeting. And I've had strong sponsorship, but at 6.5 years sober, I almost drank. And the reason I almost drank is because I hit such a low bottom that you can only go up. And then I started struggling and I didn't want to tell anybody. I didn't want my sponsor to realize he wasn't doing that great. And I didn't want to tell you. And I started sharing what I was like, what happened, and what I wished I was like. Then I was sharing what I was like, what happened, and what I wanted you to think I was like. Then I was sharing what I was like, what happened, and what I wished I was like. And what I thought I should be like at 6.5 years sober. And now at almost 39, this is the show. But I realized because I said a prayer and I stayed sober overnight, but I was an inch away from picking up a drink rather than look bad in AA. And what that lesson taught me was to just be real here. sometimes it's really fun and I have pom-poms out. And other times, you know, I've got my hand across my forehead. But I'll tell you one thing, I've never been so excited. I've been excited to be sober since I got here June 30th, 1982. And I never thought I'd say something like that when I first got here. But I was going to be a nun. Some of you have heard me before, and, you know,